And of course, our special guest tonight, the Reverend John W. Price. We're talking about his work, Revealing Heaven. And we'll come back. Final hour to go. Phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And I guess, John, you don't have to be very spiritual to believe in life after death, do you?
I think it would happen.
It would help.
I think it would develop. I do. That's an inescapable transition. When you begin to think about the significance of life after death, corroborated by all these stories and how it goes together with the Bible, spirituality, I think, is a result.
I've written 3 books. I've got another one coming out soon, and I'm fascinated by the structure of authors. How did you put Revealing Heaven together? How'd you structure it?
I'm very grateful to my wife. She is much better at organization than I am.
She's your editor.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically,
she was. I couldn't have afforded to do this with an editor I had to hire, because we went out and spent weeks, not all at the same time, working on the book and editing it ourselves. And she was an English major, and she taught English for decades, and so. She was just perfect for this. The Lord had it had her in mind when he had the idea that I was going to write this book.
Now, it's just out, so you can get it where?
Well, I haven't been to the stores today, but the editor of Harper's was telling me that they're going to be in all the Walmarts, and of course, it's been available on the internet for some time with the various websites, and I say Walmart, but all the stores like Target and in the bookstores, Barnes & Noble and the like, I think it should be available on all of them. And if it isn't, why, talk to the manager about it and get them to get it.
It's kind of neat when you see your book on a shelf.
Yeah, and... You've written books yourself, I gather.
Yeah, I've got a few out there.
So
it's not easy.
Oh heavens, no!
You did yours alone with your wife, basically. I had at least partners, because I couldn't do it by myself. There's too much to do.
Yeah, I don't know whether I would have done it if I'd known how much work it was going to be.
But it was satisfying for you, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Absolutely satisfying.
What would you say, what advice would you give people, John, who are on the fence about the other side?
Read these accounts. Read these accounts. Go online. Look up the International Association of Near-Death Studies. That's IANDS.org. Look up Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. That's NDERF.org. George, can you get those put on the on your website for people to look up?
Yeah.
Okay, please do. Those two have terrific numbers of these accounts. Dr. Jeffrey Long and his wife, Jody, founded the Near Death Experience Research Foundation and started asking people to send their accounts in, and it just grew like mad. They now have over 2,500 of these accounts from around the world, all faith groups, and they'd send a 100-point questionnaire out to anyone who sent them an experience, an account, and they'd send it back, and Jody typed all this information into a database. Well, after they had a couple of thousand accounts, they were able to query the database from various points of view, showing all the aspects of the near-death experience and its implications. And Jeff wrote the book, Evidence of the Afterlife, also published by Harper's. And so there's an example of one physician who studied this scientifically and pronounced it valid. You just can't read these accounts and not realize that they're real, that there is a God, that God is loving, that that there's a plan for our lives, that there is a time set for us to die. And I mean, there's just so much that becomes obvious and available for us to know.
John, did you see the movie Ghost
with
the late Patrick Swayze?
I like that movie.
Those entities, those black ghoulish entities that would come out and grab people.
Yep.
Do you think they exist?
Some variation on that was told to me by one man who had died, and he was resuscitated, and he said that he instantly was going down this black tunnel, going down into the earth, and he was naked, and all these other people were in there screaming, and they were all naked and clawing at the tunnel, trying to keep from going down. And blank, he was out of there and back in the hospital. He lived another few days. His nephew and I were officers together, and the nephew said to his uncle, who was not liked in the family, he was a mean character. That's what all those people with the distressing or hellish experiences had in common. He said, Uncle, you were going to hell. You need to accept Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And we don't know in his soul what happened with that, but when I saw the movie Ghost, I thought instantly of that experience that told me by that man.
Yeah, that was a great movie. All right, back to the phones we go now. Let's go to Eric Hickory, North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, Eric, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. It's a pleasure to finally get through the first-time caller. I never really expected this to happen, but it's an honor to speak to you, and it's been a very eye-opening program. My question is basically two brief questions. My mother had passed away back in 2001. She was a devout Baptist Christian. And several years later, I had visited her grave, and that night I had a dream in which there was some individual who I don't know who it was handing out cards that were ostensibly from my mother to various individuals, and I was thinking in the dream, I hope I get one. And before my mom died, I was undergoing a lot of anxiety problems, and I'm still dealing with those, and it caused her a lot of grief. And so in the dream, I did get a card from my mother, and it said, I love you and I forgive you. And this is a very personal revelation for me. And I cried in the dream, and then I woke up. And for years, I have been wondering if that might have been an actual message from my mother, or if it was maybe something a result of my subconscious. And also, quick question to follow up to your guest. Does he believe that our loved ones are continuously aware of our lives after they pass to the other side? And thank you.
Okay, let's take that one first, if you would, John.
Yeah, okay.
The ones that care about us the most, when they pass on, do they basically monitor our lives?
I don't know. Nobody's told me that. I can well imagine that that's the case. I think of one young man who was playing golf afternoon in the summer, and he was struck by lightning. He told me later that his grandmother was right there comforting him. Well, she died 3 years earlier.
Jeez. How about messages from the other side? Do people get those?
I tell people when they're right in early in the grief, their loved one has just died, I say to them, pay attention to your dreams for the next month or two, because you most likely will have a dream in which your loved one appears, and it will resolve some issue that has been hanging. And you pay attention to your dreams, because this will be a very important moment for you. How that happens, I don't know. I observe that it happens. And one of the things that I have emphatically learned in all of this is not to limit the powers of God.
So true. Let's go to Kathleen, Redding, California. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Hello. Good night. I had a terrible experience. My husband had been a very serious alcoholic, and he killed himself. 6 months after that, I went to a reputable psychic medium for a reading. And the first impression she got was one of extreme fatigue. And according to her, and the message from him, was that having killed himself, the first place that his spirit was in a resting place. And then he was going to be taken to a what they call detox, and then to rehab, where the other spirits would help him get himself back.
That's so very interesting.
It's a long story. The whole reading, I was made to believe this, that killing yourself, you're not going straight to hell. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. We come from God. We go back to God, and we have spirits there that will help us overcome whatever trouble that we had in our life.
Let's get you to react to that, John.
My reaction is positive. If one of the things that we know about God from these people who've come back in particular is that God is so intensely loving. All right, now someone like your husband who commits suicide in his alcoholic stupor, what does he need but exactly what you described happening on the other side? I think that's a wonderful, wonderful account. It was a dream. Oh, is she gone?
She's listening to you.
Oh, you're there. That was a dream, you say? Did I get that wrong, ma'am?
This is through the psychic mediumship.
Oh, the psychic, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that this was his message to me through her. What was happening to him. And so it's distressing that some people, for whatever reason, you know, their faith or whatever, they think, oh, suicide, if you kill yourself, you're going straight to a bad place. You're going to hell. And apparently that's not it.
Yeah, I don't believe that, unless the person is a terribly mean person. Out of the 15 I've spoken to, only one of the three or four suicides went to hell, but that wasn't because he committed suicide. It was because he was a mean man,
yeah,
cruel man.
He probably deserved it.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you pick the 15, John?
How did I pick them?
Yeah. How'd they come to you?
Anybody. They all come to me.
Okay.
I talk about this, and people come out of the woodwork and say, well, I had that experience, and I get them to talk about it.
Let's go to David, South Carolina, first-time caller. David, good morning.
Good morning, George, and thank you so much for being on. How are you guys?
You are welcome.
Thank you so much for being here. Hey, listen, I'm 61 years old. I'm a registered nurse. I've worked 20 years in emergency room intensive care unit.
Good.
I am a Vietnam veteran. I was a medic, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marine Division, Dong Ha. I'd like to ask your guest opinion on something like an impression, like if you grew up hearing something over and over and over as a child that would influence your life later on, even though you had reason and knowledge had taken over. For instance, after I was discharged from the service, I wasn't very happy with society. They weren't happy with me. And I did a lot of terrible things. And one of those was, of course, drugs during that time period. One night, or I should say one day, I'd done too much drugs. I found myself standing in the kitchen doorway on the 2nd floor of our apartment with nothing on. After seeing all I can describe as a very super white light up in the trees with a person, and I was wondering, why is that person standing in the trees? And it was extremely bright. And all of a sudden, it was as if his face got huge beyond belief, and it said, stop. That's all it said was, stop. And I seen something past him that was beautiful, and I wanted to go there. And all I could hear was like an echo of stop, stop. And next thing I knew, I was standing in a doorway. Now, only a few moments had passed, but to me, I was looking at this person and seeing that beautiful, feeling, loving thing for a long, long time. But I wonder, I don't want to say that the light or the person, and I say a guy because he had a beard, but do you think that during a child I grew up in the church of singing under the Church of Nazarene, we sang a lot. And of course, you have the traditional pictures of Jesus, and I have two college degrees, one in computers and art and one in nursing. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to say the person looked like Jesus, but he was pretty close. What do you think of that?
Well, that sounds like you had a very interesting vision.
I think I was then told that, more or less, that I wasn't told by him, but I got the picture. I had done too much drugs. And I think that maybe I had either done so much drugs that my heart stopped for a second or two. Because all I remember was getting up from the table after doing something very, very terrible. And that you're talking 40 years ago now, so...
Yeah, right.
I've changed everybody. Things change, and that's Heraclitus who said that. Things will change, so don't worry.
Do you remember hearing me talk earlier about Private Alberto and his? He was a drug addict who dropped out of high school and went to California for drugs.
And he saw the light too, then, didn't he?
Yeah, well, more than just seeing the light, he had this. He had the review of his life, and the Lord showed him how he was throwing the gifts that God had given him back in the face of God when he was doing all those drugs. In other words, not living up to the potential of the gifts that God had given him.
Why do so many people, John, seem to have an epiphany after they die and come back?
Well, you've used the right word, epiphany. That's the feast of the epiphany is when revelation of the baby Jesus to the Gentiles as the church celebrates it. And the lessons that follow that are all showing the might and power of the Lord. When you have an experience like this and you're in the middle of that review of your life, you're seeing the power of the Lord in your life and the potential of what it could be, and that is a magnificent epiphany.
Well, it is, and I'm just...
And that's life-changing.
Overwhelmed, though, that how they come back changes them so dramatically. They're actually good people, aren't they?
Exactly. Right. Yep.
Even some of the worst people are good people.
That's exactly so, and to me... If you take the phrase, by their fruits you will know them, this speaks to how effective these near-death experiences are, how real they are, because you don't have that kind of change in someone's life that abruptly.
No, that is a good point. John, do you have a website that you want to give out personally or just the ones you mentioned?
I have been unsuccessful in getting the website working again.
Ah.
So at this point, I don't have one.
Okay.
But when it does go, www.frforfatherjohnwprice.org is my website.
All right. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, John, right here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about revealing heaven. We'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you. First couple hours, Russell Targ joins us about remote viewing. And then, of course, Devaron joins us, who claims to be an alien-human hybrid. So we'll talk with him about that. And when we come back in a moment with the Reverend John W. Price, we'll take final phone calls as we talk about near-death experiences right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, John Price with us. John, did you ever have any problems convincing people about the other side?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did they fight you tooth and nail?
Well, even this afternoon, I was dealing with someone who was interviewing me on another radio program, and he fought tooth and nail on this because it didn't fit his theology that there's such things as life after death and so forth. But I don't want to get into that. I'm so sorry to have to tell you that some of the clergy have not believed me in the least on these accounts and have said things like there's no such thing as life after death, and which I find astonishing.
And they're clergy members?
Yeah, right.
That's bizarre.
They just want to deal with life here and now. Well, you got to realize that these people never had really dealt with anybody who'd had the experience, and a lot of clergy feel like they've got to be modernist in order to be accepted by the laity. And so they will outdo the laity in expressing such attitudes. Well, I think it's counterproductive and certainly not pastoral, because people are really concerned about these issues. They want to know more about it. And this is kind of one of the reasons I've written the book, is to try to convince a lot of clergy that these things are real, that they need to use these accounts in their pastoral dealings with people who are facing death and the death of loved ones, that it's very, very important not to ignore it, but to deal with it head on.
It would be kind of a void to think that there was not anything beyond death.
That's right. It's exactly so.
Kind of sad.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't want to think that.
No, it's a much more positive worldview to realize that there is a God, that God does it. It has unlimited powers. He does what is appropriate for his plan, and sometimes that doesn't jibe with what we want. But I found when I was about 42, one afternoon I was writing a sermon, and it kept on growing and growing and growing. And normally for me, a formal text sermon is 10 or 12 pages long. This one got up to 25 or 30 pages before I could finish. And I thought, what? Something's going on here that I need to pay attention to. And so I went, took it all into the library, spread it out on several tables, looked at it, and realized that what I had been doing, unconsciously, was reviewing what my prayer life had been for my entire life. And I realized in reading this that the gist of it was, all my prayers have been answered. No, John, not this, but this other, which you'll find is much better than what you were looking for in the first place. Well, that was 32 years ago. I'm 74. And I found that to be continually true ever since, that God's plan for me is terrific. If I just will be true to it, follow it, and believe that there is one, take a positive approach about it. And that's what's brought me to this book.
You're not scared about the other side, are you?
No, I'm not ready. I don't think I'm ready to go, because with this book in particular, I feel like I have a whole lot that I've got to do before I can say, okay, Lord, we'll hang it up now.
Miles to go before you sleep, as Robert Frost once wrote.
Well put.
Let's go to some final calls here. Mike is in Oceanside, California, on the Wild Card Line. Hello, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, Mike. Go ahead.
So I had a question for the Reverend. I used to read the Bible a lot, and you said you thought that people that stuck around ended up being ghosts. What is your theological basis for ghosts? Because in the Bible, there's only like one real story about ghosts, and that was in 1 Samuel, I believe, where Saul talks to Samuel's ghost via a necromancer. And there's not a whole lot of talk about ghosts in the Bible, really, except for this one story, as far as I know. And I was just wondering what your theological basis for ghosts was.
Well, I don't know why the Bible is silent about that. That one incident you talk about is in 1 Samuel, where everything's falling apart for Saul, and he goes and he consults a medium, someone who can talk to the dead, even though that's forbidden in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, and that he himself, as king, had been killing them and driving the others out. But he wanted to talk to Samuel, who'd been dead for some years. So he went to this medium in Endor and disguised so she wouldn't realize he was Saul, and said, "Bring up Samuel." And when she did, she realized this was Saul. And Saul says, or Samuel says to Saul, "Why did you wake me up?" So that was the early biblical concept back at the time of the judges and the kings, that the first couple of kings, that the dead sleep in the ground but can be brought up by a medium, but don't do it. Well, that biblical thought evolves, if you will, through to finally Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that we change, our physical body changes into a spiritual body. And then he says in 2 Corinthians 12 that I know a man who 14 years ago went to the seventh heaven, the third heaven, which is a Jewish Hebrew euphemism for paradise, and later says paradise. Well, the spiritual body, there's the key to the reality of ghosts, because you cannot look at history, at contemporary accounts all through history of ghosts coming and appearing in places that they had been in life. And I have never seen a ghost that I know of, but too many people whom I thoroughly respect have had these experiences, and they're all understandable in some respect. I knew about the little girl who had been murdered in that building on our church property,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by George, there she is appearing as a ghost. Now, I didn't see her. I've not been given that gift of being able to see ghosts. I loved the line in that one movie where the little boy says, "I see people, I see dead people."
The Sixth Sense. Right?
Sixth Sense, yes. And so many of those movies have got really good concepts in them about ghosts and life after death. They do get one thing wrong. None of them have shown the clarity of vision that these people tell me they suddenly have when their soul floats up into the room. But we've gotten off the subject. There's no discussion other than Samuel coming up of ghosts in the Bible, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist.
Let's take a few more calls here. We'll go to Susan in Baldwin, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Susan, good morning.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Pastor John.
Good morning, Susan.
Question, maybe you could clarify it for me. I just would like to know, with all these people who say that they die and come back, there's a place in the Bible, if you could please explain it to me, it says that it is appointed unto man once to die, and then after that, the judgment. So it doesn't say that we get to die over and over again and keep coming back. It just clearly says once to die. Could you please clarify that for me, sir?
Yes, of course. Once to die permanently is the insight that I would bring to it from this, because I know a number of people who've died several times and were brought back. The statement in the Bible is just not complete. It would say only it is appointed to die permanently one time. I've come to realize and say of somebody that they died, that they died permanently, because these people come back and forth. One woman I know died 6 or 7 times in the operating room when they would bring her back, and then the anesthesia was still in her, and so her soul would float up out of the body.
And then come back in again?
Yeah, I said, "My goodness, how many times did this happen to you?" She said, "I don't know, 6 or 7 times."
Oh, jeez. What willpower, though, huh?
Well, it wasn't her time just yet. And then finally, when the doctors gave up on her, I hope you're all sitting down. The doctors gave up, pronounced her dead, and all the processes began of preparing the body to be taken away by the funeral director. And in the meantime, she's off, and she's with all her loved ones and her dead cats, and sees her loved ones. This was her second time to happen, for this to happen to her. 10 years earlier it had. And then she's finally told it's not your time. She comes back to her body, and she sees on her chest of her physical body this clipboard, and on the clipboard is her death certificate. She gets, and her soul comes back into the body. She wakes up. She starts talking, which freaks out the morgue workers, who ran. And the anesthesiologist, who had promised her that she would not die of anesthesia this time, came down to see the body one last time, and she's alive. So it was a very, very startling experience for that anesthesiologist. She'd had an earlier experience 10 years earlier with the identical afterlife event.
Let's go to Jonathan, Overland Park, Kansas, Wildcard Line. John, go ahead.
How you doing, George? How you doing, John?
Good, Jonathan.
Fine. Thank you.
This is my first time calling. I've been listening to you for like 2 months now. Amazing show.
Thank you. A lot of
interesting subjects.
Glad you found us.
But, thank you. And this is kind of like a complex question, because I believe I'm a firm believer of God, and I think that God's plan is so complex that He has many designs, and throughout these designs, it goes with our choices, whatever choice we make, as like a certain design that He has already planned. So if a person dies and has like a near-death experience, does that mean like it's a glitch in reality? Because I was like told to believe that God has a certain plan, a design plan for everybody.
I believe
if they die ahead of time. Does that mean like there was a glitch in reality somewhere?
Or was that the plan?
Excuse me.
If they died ahead of their time, they'll be sent back.
Look, because the question is, what is ahead of their time?
Right? Well, that we can't know. None of the 224 people now, thanks to two more on your show, that I've spoken with, ever told me anything about having about instructions before they were born. But I've read this, that some people talked about knowing that before they were born, their soul was told, you will be born in this particular place to these particular people, and here's what your life will be, and here's how you will die, and when you will die. They then are born, and they don't remember any of this, but they remember it when they're coming back from a near-death experience, some of them, and then none of them that I've spoken with, but there it is. Now, that makes the suggestion that part of the plan that God has for us is even the moment of our death. And if somebody interferes with that, well, then they're guilty of murder. If somebody interferes with that by killing themselves, well, then they are interfering with God's plan for them.
Next up, Jonathan, we just did. Stephen in Eugene, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, Stephen, go ahead.
Hey. Good morning, gentlemen. Pleasure. Interesting conversation. And I guess in my lifetime, I've had enough experiences of various sorts that only convince me that there's more to life than what we're experiencing. But in the near-death experience, I had an incident happen about 10 years ago. I used to be a body surfer in Hawaii, and almost drowned once. And it was the drowning to where I was just about ready to take my gulp of water when my head broke the surface. So fortunately, I didn't drown in that instance. But I'd gone to bed and was sleeping, obviously, and I suddenly went into a dream state, I remember, and I was drowning. And I remember it was kind of like that experience I'd had prior where I had almost drowned, but I was going through the whole scenario again, Only this time I was reaching the point where I just, you know, the panic was over. I was relaxing. I knew I was going to make it, and I knew I was going to drown, and I relaxed. And I remember just blacking out, completely blacking out. Everything went black. And suddenly I was kind of enveloped in a, I don't know, it's such a cliche to say, but a white light. But it wasn't a light like looking into a light. It was, I don't know how to describe it. It was like being surrounded or enveloped in something that had depth. And anyway, it wasn't a tunnel. I think it was just enveloped in this white light. And I remember all this very clearly and being conscious of it. And I don't know how long it was, but suddenly I just snapped. It was gone. I snapped awake and was going, just taking this huge, deep gasp. And suddenly I was, you know, aware of my surroundings. And I was lifting up, and I had my face in the pillow. And obviously, suffocating myself. Yeah. But the bizarre part of this is my wife, I'd woken my wife up when I was sucking in air. And later on, she told me she looked up and over across me, and there was somebody standing beside me on the side of the bed.
Like an angel or something?
Yeah. And I, you know, of course, I questioned her and doubted her, and she goes, no, don't tell me I didn't see that.
I'm sure she did. John, we're almost out of time. Revealing Heaven, your book is brand new. It's out there. Good luck with it, John.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed being with you, George, with this. You're a very good interviewer.
Went by fast, didn't it?
Yeah, sure did.
Okay, you take care of yourself. John W. Price, the Reverend, his book, Revealing Heaven, and we'll have some links for you at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wellesley, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.